This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Vanvizzuto. Did I say that? I sort of stumbled on the Vanvizzuto.
That was good. That was good. It's Buona Pasqua. You know what that means?
It's good Easter.
Yeah, happy Easter. Yeah. Almost.
Yeah,
all
right.
Easter week.
It's Good Friday. How do you say that?
Oh.
Come on.
Giovanni. I don't know. I have to think about that.
What is it in French? It's Viandro?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not a French. I don't know the French.
I'm trying to remember 40 years ago.
I know.
French, you know? Viandra, I think. Something like
that.
Yeah,
and usually there's like a different term. Even it wouldn't just be the straight translation, you know? Like in Bocca al Lupo means good luck. But it actually means in the mouth of the wolf.
There you go. I can understand. In the mouth of the wolf, if he spits you out, it's good luck. Anyway,
we're here with
Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're on an open show. That means you get to be the guest tonight. You get to determine what we're going to talk about. You get to ask your questions, and we'll answer them for you. It could be on anything. Maybe you want to talk about taxes. Maybe you want to talk about investments. Maybe you want to talk about IRAs or estate planning or elder care issues or insurances. We got to do an insurance show soon and talk about insurance. You know?
Yeah, sure. Insurance is a great vehicle, but it's a confusing one for a lot of folks.
Well, and my opinion is that it's misrepresented so often.
Mm-hmm.
Whether
mm-hmm.
it's auto and home or long-term care or life insurance or whatever, there's always an economic bias about it, and that bias comes ringing through. And
yep.
Very few people do true risk management,
mm-hmm.
which is assessing the risk and determining what you can do to mitigate the risk, and then determining if you can't mitigate it totally,
right.
Whether you want to self-insure it or whether you want to insure it with insurance. And how much should you insure it for? You rarely should insure anything to the nth degree.
Right.
You always should have some self-insurance. But
mm-hmm.
it just depends. There's some situations I've had where we do insure the 100% of the risk.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there's all kinds of topics
sure.
out there that we can talk about. And if you want to call in and ask a question, it's 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. And while people are calling in, Tom, we'll just sit here in silence and wait for them to call. How's that? I can't go silent for too long, you know? 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask your question. And usually the people who call in the earliest, they're the ones that get the most attention to their question. Usually later on in the show, we get a bunch of other people call. You know, one interesting topic while people call in, there are a couple people calling in now. I get so often people say, well, if I pay off my mortgage, I'm not going to have that mortgage deduction, and I won't be able to itemize anymore.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So what?
Right.
So what?
Right.
You're paying a bank a dollar to save 20 or 30 cents on your income tax return. I don't understand the concept. You know, the fact that your mortgage is tax deductible is only a minor piece in the calculation as to what is the opportunity cost of the money you're borrowing versus the money you might have that you could pay that loan off with.
Right.
And so often people are trying to pay their mortgage off quickly, and they're avoiding their 403Bs and 401Ks. So they're putting more money against their mortgage, but they're not maxing out their 401Ks and 403Bs. And that's, in my opinion, usually, not always, but 90-some% of the time is a mistake.
Yep, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
We got to go to calls right now. Bill in Baltimore, 401K, what can we do for you?
Hey, guys. In 2009, I left a company, left my 401K there. I'm thinking about taking that 401k and converting it to some kind of a IRA. Maybe conversion is the wrong word. I don't mean take the money. I mean just move it from the company to
it's called a rollover.
Right. Roll it over to more of a self directed IRA.
Correct.
Are there any tax ramifications I need to be aware of? I'm thinking there's none.
There are none. As long as you do what's called a direct rollover, that means that whoever you choose to move, let's say you're moving the money to T. Rowe Price or Vanguard or Charles Schwab, the check or the money will be made out to the new custodian for your benefit of your new IRA you set up with them. If you do that, it's perfectly tax-deferred, very simple. Nothing even has to be reported on your tax return.
Okay, very good.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
All right, have a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't roll it over to a Roth IRA.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
Now, that's a different story, but, the next caller wants to ask about Roth IRAs anyway. Karen in Westminster, how can we help you?
Well, now you're talking about Roth, and that was what I was going to ask about. I just turned 70, and I have not purchased long-term care insurance.
Okay.
I've been reading up on it, and some places say that you're wasting your money doing that way. You're better off to invest it because if the long-term care, if anything happens to you, that money's gone. If you get a Roth or something else, the children will get it. What's your opinion?
Well, do you still work, Karen?
Yes, I am, but not for maybe for another year, and that's it.
Okay. Well, you can only do a Roth while you are still working in the sense of a contributory Roth. Okay, so which is $6,500 a year for you. So you can only do that for one more year, right? So that's the first thing. So now the second part of your question. Yes, your children, if you save the money and you pass away, your Roth and so forth will be inherited by your family. But if you did go into a long-term care situation, and you couldn't afford to pay for it because all your money had been eaten up, you wouldn't leave anything to your children. So it's not as simple. You should never believe an insurance agent who says everybody and his brother needs to buy it, period. And you should never believe anybody who says to you, don't ever buy long-term care because you're better off accumulating the money and leaving it to your family in the end anyway. Both are wrong. You have to assess the risk of long-term care wisely. You have to determine how would you minimize a major expense of long-term care if it were to happen. If inheritance is an important issue to you, how would you make sure that your children's inheritance isn't devoured in the long-term care stay? And these types of things. And then you make the decision, yay or nay. And a lot of times, we end up deciding with our clients, and we're fee-only advisors, so we don't sell the product. We usually end up self-insuring some and insuring some. And it just depends on the client, whether we self-insure a lot or we self-insure very little. Each client's a little different. So it's very difficult to answer your question without looking at the specifics, but I would never make a generalization one way or the other.
Okay, good. Yeah, it is very confusing, and making that final decision is like, which way do you go?
Well, let me ask you this question. Just in general, would you say your estate's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, or millions of dollars?
Well, it's probably around maybe right now. Well, I have two houses. If I sold my houses plus all my investments, we're probably looking at maybe $220,000.
Okay. $200,000 or $300,000, yeah. So you're a perfect candidate that should be looking at this because, you go into a long-term care situation, you want to leave behind an inheritance. I can assure you, ma'am, your assets are going to get wiped out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So you need to look at the issue, or you need to look at strategies to make sure that you wouldn't get, your estate wouldn't get devoured in a long-term care situation. All right?
Yeah. All right, thank you. I'll keep listening and get your phone number and perhaps think about this a little bit and make an appointment.
All right, well, you keep it listening. Somewhere along the way, I'm sure they'll do a commercial for us. All right?
Okay.
Thank you, Karen. We got to take a break with Nick Rehak, but I'll tell you, the traffic was pretty good out there, so
yep.
I don't know what he's going to tell us, but we'll listen anyway. Go ahead, Nick.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Who is that? Who's that group, Anita?
Who's that, Anita?
She finally comes up with something that's reasonable,
yeah.
And she doesn't even know who it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
What are we going to do with her? You know? We've been trying to razzle her for the few weeks that she's been with us, and it's really not. She doesn't razzle very easily.
She doesn't.
So well, we'll work on her. She appreciates that. Calvin in Hampstead, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew. I have a question regarding long-term health care premiums. I think they are deductible as a medical deduction.
Yep.
To a certain point.
Yeah. And, well, there's two issues there, but go ahead.
Yeah. I currently have long-term health care that I pay premiums for twice a year, as well as my wife, and I wanted to know if we may have been eligible for a deduction.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it all depends on your long-term, it all depends on your medical expense. So it's 7.5% of your gross income you have to exceed in all medical expenses, which includes your long-term care insurance premiums. So you've got to add up your prescriptions, you got to add up your medical insurance, your long-term care insurance, your doctor's bills, your dentist's bills, your eyeglasses, the miles you drive to and from the pharmacy and to the doctors and so forth. And if that exceeds 7.5%, if you're over 65 years of age, then you get some deduction for every dollar over 7.5% of your income. If you're under 65, then it's 10% of your income. So it's a big nut to break just to get a dollar in deduction. But you have to add it all up and see if that works.
Well, fortunately, we don't qualify. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the good news, Calvin. All right.
Take care.
All right. And also in the first year you buy long-term care insurance, mm-hmm. State of Maryland gives you a little credit for buying long-term care insurance. That's always something that's easily missed on a tax return if you had bought your long-term care insurance for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're in Ben in Randallstown. How can we help you?
Hey, Drew, how you doing today?
We're doing great.
I got a friend of mine that's a producer at Interscope Records in California.
Okay.
And he said, you know, his manager put him in Merrill Lynch. He got about $85 million at Merrill Lynch Bank. Well, I guess Merrill Lynch in New York City. And I was talking to him the other day. I was saying, why don't you put your money in bank books, something like that? He said, well, you know, you can't put your money in bank books at one bank. Can you do that every $250,000? How many bank books can you have at one bank at one time if you choose to put your money in a one account or more than one account at bank?
If you have money at a bank, you're insured for $250,000 as a single depositor, or if you're joint on the account, then it's $500,000.
So make sure I got a clear understanding. If you say that I got $1 million, give me an example, can I get four bank books at that same bank?
No, I mean, you could, but you would have to do it creatively. You'd have to do Ben. You do a bank book for Ben for $250,000. Okay, so that's $250,000. Mm-hmm. Then you do a bank book for Ben and his wife. That would be $250,000. That would actually be $500,000. And then you do a bank book for your wife, and that would be another $250,000. So then total, that's $1 million. So you would have to do one for you, one for your wife, and one joint. That's if you're married. If you're not married, then you'd have a difficulty because then you would subject yourself to putting other people's names on your account to do that. Now, there is one way. There is one creative way he could do it. He could set up one account with mm-hmm. the bank mm-hmm. and put four beneficiaries paid on death to mm-hmm. four different beneficiaries and have $1 million of coverage. But we're going to require you to be creative, Ben, and I wouldn't recommend it. I would agree with your friend that you'd probably be better off just putting $250,000 in four separate distinct banks or buying other types of investments. All right?
Oh, so you're saying, Drew, so if you wanted to, to be creative, if you wanted to, you can deal with 100 banks at $250,000 if you want to per bank book, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I got 100 different banks, I could put $250,000 in 100 different banks, and I'd have $250 or $25 million of coverage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right? Got to run. That's a good point. Thanks, Ben. We're on an open show today, Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvizzuto. And that means that we are taking our listeners are our guests.
That's
they get
right.
to determine what we're talking about. And Roth IRAs have been a big topic. So here's Mike and Easton talking about Roth IRAs. Mike, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew. So my wife had a Roth IRA, and so I. She was working up until just a couple of years ago, so there was really no issue with how that all worked out. But now she's a stay-at-home mom, and what I'm wondering is, can I continue to contribute to her Roth IRA for her? And to make it maybe a little bit more complicated, she actually does work part-time.
It doesn't matter, Mike.
Okay.
As long as you're married, as long as one of the two of you have earned income, you can do whatever the maximum amount is for each up to the maximum or the earned income, whichever is lesser. So I'm assuming you and her are under 50 years of age?
Yeah.
So you can do $5,500 each. And as long as you make $11,000 of earned income, voila, you can put $5,500 in each account, no questions asked.
Unless he makes too much.
Huh?
Unless he makes too
much. Well, that's true. You do have an income limit of $181,000 for 2014, $183,000 for 2015. If you're over that, you can't contribute to the Roth for either of you.
Okay. No, that's not an issue. But I guess, you know, when I was reading the rules online, you know, it talks about that you can only contribute up to the max of what you earn in income. So she actually made, like, she got a W-2 for, like, $200 or something. So I didn't know whether that would...
No, you can finish the full $5,500 if you want to, as long as you had it. And that is, what they're saying is correct, but if you have a joint return, the earned income counts toward both people on that return.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about that at all. Go ahead and fund the full thing for both of you if you've got the cash. And that's pretty straightforward, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And does it matter, you know, who writes the check to the IRA?
No. Your mother and father can write the check for the Roth IRA, and it's still perfectly fine.
Okay.
All right, man.
Thank you so much for your help.
All right. You take care. You know, that can be confusing.
Yep, sure.
You know, I get that a lot. You know, well, my, you know, you get the people who are seniors and one worked and they made maybe $7,000 or $8,000 and they say, well, she didn't work, so I can't do anything for them. And
right.
It's no, that's not true. Matter of fact, I had one where she worked, but he was under 70 and a half. She was over 70 and a half. And remember, when you turn 70 and a half, you can't do an IRA anymore.
Yeah.
So in order for them to get the deduction, even though she was the only one that worked, she had to put the money in his IRA to get the benefit. And so it doesn't matter as long as somebody had earned income out of a married couple.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of questions about the Roth versus the traditional. There's a lot of debate and just kind of confusion about how to make it work, and those are great examples there.
And another good question is, which should I do? Should I do the Roth or should I do the traditional? And that's a question of it depends, you know?
Yep.
It depends. It depends on what you're looking for. It depends on what you're – you know, and I'll tell you what, when I do tax returns – and the client is, you know, 6 months ago, gung-ho Roth, gung-ho Roth, gung-ho Roth. And then I do the tax return and I say, oh, and by the way, you owe $3,000. But if you would have done a traditional IRA, you'd only owe $522.
Right,
and
right.
They're like, can I change my mind on that, you know?
Right, right.
Anyway, we're on an open show, Tommaso, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, you're the guest tonight. You get to determine the direction of our conversation, and we'll take your question, whatever it is, elder care law, estate planning, income taxes, investments, insurances, Roth IRAs, traditionals, 401ks, you name it, we'll deal with it, and... that's what we do this show for, is to educate people about personal finance and hopefully minimize, eliminate as best as possible economic bias when we do our discussion so that it is pure, you know, as information as we can give people.
Educating folks.
Anyway, we've got to take a pause. Nick Rehak's still out there trying to figure out if there's anything to report on the traffic, because I didn't see anything. I don't know about you, Tommaso.
Yeah, yeah.
But he found something when he was on there last time. But right now, we're going to go to Nick. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. Take it away, Nick.
The cat.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Back to the boring stuff. What do you think?
I don't know. We're working on her.
Well, yeah, I think so. Now.
We're going to celebrate.
What is that? Oh, it's
celebration.
No.
Yeah. Right?
What sporting team plays that? The Orioles? No?
They used to, I think. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like it. Yeah. That's okay, Anita. Don't worry about
it. It's okay.
Going to Dave in Northwest Baltimore. Dave, how can I help you?
Yeah, Drew, I became 70 and a half today on April 1st.
Congratulations, sir.
I retired from the federal government. Mm-hmm.
This isn't a joke, is it?
Accounts, one must take a distribution a year from today, right? A year, because the rule is a year from the year one becomes 70 and a half. So according to the Thrift Board, by April 1st of 2016, I must take a distribution.
So you turned 70 and a half in 2015.
Right.
But you know, you're right. When it's your first time, you have until April 1st of 2016 to take the first one. But if you wait till 16, you're going to also have to take your second one in 16 by December 31st. So keep that in mind.
The second one?
Yeah, you have to take one every year. So if you defer the very first year until April 1st, 2016, then
right.
When the second year comes, you have to still take one before December 31st and every December 31st thereafter. So that way you would plug two RMDs into 2016. And if you want to do that, there are planning reasons you would do that, but there's also a lot of planning reasons not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There are all the things of better investments than taking them from the thrift board. The thrift board has investment.
Yeah, I understand. They have the C fund, the I fund. You're talking about the thrift savings plan, the federal government, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's totally, you have to look at it from the investment viewpoint and you have to look at it from the income tax viewpoint and know that you're going to plug two required minimum distributions. If you wait for the first one to next year, you're going to have to plug two of them in. And if you take it all, I mean, if you take one this year, then you'll have to take one next year, but you're also going to have to take that money out of the thrift plan a little sooner than maybe what you'd want to. So it's going to be a decision you're just going to have to make based on the income taxes and the investment side of the equation.
Let me ask you, regarding the traditional IRA, one also must take a distribution. The same rule applies.
Correct. That mm-hmm. is correct. And you know, one of the
it
reasons...
doesn't apply to the Roth.
Right. Well, that's true. Roths do not have required minimum distributions for the original mm-hmm. account holder or their spouse, only for heirs. So if you passed away and left it to me, I would have required minimum distributions on that account. But if you keep it until the day you die, you will never have a required minimum distribution.
And that's based on your life expectancy, right? I mean,
you mean your required minimum distributions? How do they determine that?
Yeah, how
they determine it, believe it or not, Dave, they determine it on your life expectancy and somebody theoretically 10 years younger than you. So it's a joint life expectancy of you and somebody theoretically 10 years younger than you. And when
that's
would the...
an individual. I'm just a single individual.
Well, it doesn't matter. The required minimum distribution tables, believe it or not, are built on the life expectancy of you and theoretically somebody 10 years younger than you. It's a joint life expectancy table. Don't ask me why. It just is. And that's why the life expectancy table would take you to age 97, because the first required minimum distribution number that you're going to use is like 27.1. That means you would be 97 and a half or something years of age. That's not your life expectancy. 85, 86 is. But your
right,
joint life expectancy with somebody 10 years younger than you is both of you will likely have passed away by the time you would be 97 or 98 years of age. Anyway, I have to move on, but it's a good question. We ought to do a whole show on calculating required minimums and what they do and so forth.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Take care, Dave, and happy birthday. Did he say, was today really
his
birthday?
70 and a half birthday today.
70 and a half? Well, it's a birthday.
That's right.
Earl in Northwest Baltimore, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew. How you doing?
Doing great. And you?
Okay, pretty good. Hey, here's my question for you. By the biotechs, what's your opinion about the biotech, first of all?
Well, I think that, I think it's a great long-term industry, though you always have to be, weary of some of the extravagant prices that are being paid for biotech. But mm-hmm. there's no doubt that the future of medicine and all kinds of concepts are built into biotech, and there's going to be an incredible amount of money that's going to be made by biotech companies. Now, the next question you have to ask yourself, Earl, is has the market already discounted a lot mm-hmm. of that opportunity? It's kind of like the 1990s when the tech companies were everyone was mm-hmm. sitting there saying, wow, the Internet's going to be fantastic and it's going to do great. And, and they were right, but it was 15 years later that they were right. It wasn't 1997 and 98.
Well, that's true. Well, how about let's say buying an ETF where you have a number of the biotech stocks, so it's not one biotech stock, it's a whole group of biotech stocks.
I think you're absolutely right, Earl. But what I would do is I would set aside an amount that I want to own in biotech, and I would lay it out over maybe a 4-year period of time that I would dollar cost average into the biotech, because I think they're expensive right now, personally.
Yep.
That's just my opinion. All right, Earl?
Okay, thank you.
It's a good question, because it's a great industry.
Sure.
Chad in Baltimore, how can we help you?
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call, and I've always been listening to your show. I have a question regarding 401k or Roth, whichever. I was contributing to 401k in my previous companies, and in the last 5 years, I have not contributed to the new company where I joined.
Okay.
There are two questions that I understand there is something called as makeover, or makeup, or maximum amount what I can contribute, so that the employer also has to give that much amount. Is that profitable, or what amount should I put in 401k, or should I put in Roth?
Does your company offer both a Roth and a 401k, or are you saying you only have a traditional 401k, and now you're wondering, should I just go and do my own personal Roth? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, I was in a different company where I joined a 401. When I changed over, I did not change over, and I did not contribute to 401k for some reasons. And now all my salary I can contribute, and I want to know what the maximum I can do.
So the maximum you can – you're over 50, Chad?
Yes, I am going to be 65 in July.
Oh, congratulations. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be 58 in July. you'd always focus your savings on your company plan, and you can do $24,000 of your income up to 100% of your pay, assuming your company allows that, and 90-some percent that I've ever seen, do allow 100% of your salary up to $24,000 to go into your 401k if you desire to do it. And that is always the best place to start your savings and try to get it up to the maximum that you can. All right, and so
I can call my company and ask them that, because I really don't need the money right now, because I have saved enough, so I can contribute.
Well, then
the full service.
You should put the whole kin caboodle in there, my friend. $24,000, and then when you're ready to retire, you should have a nice little nest egg there.
Thank you, sir.
All right,
mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
God bless you. Bye bye.
All right, I received that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are on an open show. Steve's on the line. We'll talk to him after we come back from a pause. We have to pause every so often, and but if we probably can handle another one or two callers before we're finished. 410-922-6680.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are going to find out about the weather, Tommaso. Scott Larimore. Whatever. Scott, take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
That's like that stuff that Graham listens to, isn't it? What is that? I don't know.
She doesn't know again.
She has no idea. It's music, though.
It is.
What's that mean? No. It's electric music. Wasn't that stuff that Graham listens to?
Yeah, yeah.
He's wearing headphones, and I listened to it once. He said, here, listen to this, and it was like... like this electric noise going on.
Keeps him focused. Whatever keeps him focused.
Yeah, well, you know, he does a great job, so I don't care what he listens to. We have just time for our last two callers here. We're going to Steve in Towson. Steve, how can we help you?
Okay, my wife and I have a private husband-wife health insurance plan.
Okay.
And I will be turning 65 in a few months.
Okay.
So I will be going on Medicare.
Okay.
She's younger, so she would not.
All right.
Now, our income at the current time, such that we are eligible and are getting some subsidy for the health insurance.
Okay.
Now, what happens when I go on Medicare in a few months? Can she still get it? Like, let's say next year, she's a couple years away from being 65.
Sure. She can just get her own policy and continue on the plan, and she'll still get she should still get a subsidy, depending on your income, of course.
Right. So the amount that will be used to determine if she gets and how much of a subsidy will still be the joint income of the two of us?
Yes. The Obamacare is looking at the tax return of the individuals. And so I'm assuming you two are retired. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, we have very small incomes. We're $10,000-$20,000 a year. That's it. It's below the limits.
Yeah.
Combined.
And if you have the ability to control it, you know, then yeah, they're going to look at your income tax return. Matter of fact, I have clients that are worth a good bit of money, and we control their income tax liability, and get them subsidies. So, you know, there are a lot of people out there who have the ability to control their income and can go to the Affordable Care Act and ask them to subsidize their premium. It's perfectly legal. And in your situation, it sounds like it's perfectly logical. So, yeah, your wife will get the subsidy. But just make sure you absolutely understand what your income is, because a lot of people don't realize that that subsidy is based on your theoretical idea of what your income is going to be. And if at the end of the year something alters on the upside, they're going to come back to you and say on your tax return, oh, Steve, we gave you a subsidy, and now your income was higher than you thought it was, and you owe us money. And so there's a lot of people out there that are going to get that shock of their life, or getting it right now, on this year's tax return.
Now, Medicare, the subsidy, forget it. That has nothing to do with Medicare.
Nothing to do with Medicare. It's strictly to do... Right. Yeah, you already paid for that, and you're paying for it out of your Social Security check, Medicare Part B.
And so, if I don't get Social Security yet, which I'm not taking it yet, then I just...
Then you just pay it out of your checking account. Yep, that's absolutely correct. All right, man?
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Take care. That's the whole concept of the subsidy and filing the tax return to prove that you're, you know, anyway, it's a long story.
Yep.
Marie in VA benefits. How can we help you?
Yes. Hi. First off, thank you for taking my call, and I really enjoy your show.
Well, we appreciate that. Well, how can we help you?
Thank you. I have a question about VA pension benefits. Say, for instance, I was in the forces in the military service from 1953 and discharged in 1961. I'm now in my 80s. I have never applied for my pension benefits from VA. Am I still eligible?
pension benefits from VA. Did you accumulate pension? Do you have medical issues? Did you have disability? What pension benefits?
I thought the VA would give a pension for being in the military for a certain amount of time.
Well, you had to receive a retirement from the military. Now, what you can get, Marie, is if you have medical expenses that are becoming greater than your other income, then the VA will give you a aid and attendance pension income.
I see.
So maybe that's what you're referring to. I'm not sure, but in order to get a pension from the military, you have to be retired from the military, which I believe is 15 years, isn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking about
15 or 20 years or something of that sort. But keep that in mind, Marie, though. If you ever have medical expenses that start to skyrocket more than your income, then you would get aid and attendance benefits, like $1,800 a month. It's a good bit of money.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. That helps me out a lot.
All right. You take care. Goodbye.
All right, thank you.
You know, it's a whole confusing area, VA.
Yeah.
You know, and the benefits that veterans have and how they can, participate in those.
Right.
It's quite confusing, and I have a lot of clients that do qualify for this aid in attendance concept, but they've applied, and it can take years.
Right.
And I've even seen the people pass away, and finally the aid in attendance is approved like 8 months after they pass away, and then they give the family back some, a retroactive check to when they originally applied, which could have been, two or three years before, a year or so before.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, very confusing thing. And then there's the whole concept of being disabled.
Right.
And if you're disabled and the concept of being disabled, like, for example, if you have diabetes and you set a foot in Vietnam, one foot in Vietnam while you were in the military, and you now have diabetes or heart problem, you're immediately qualified for a VA disability benefit, even if you ate chocolate bars every day after you left Vietnam. You're still able to have, because they attribute diabetes to military people who were in Vietnam because of the chemicals they were exposed to and so forth.
Right, right.
So it's fascinating. I've learned these things over years working with clients.
Yep.
And so Marie, if she has any medical issues, she ought to consider where was she when she was in the military during those years. Anyway.
She didn't sound like she was in her 80s. I think she was asking for somebody else.
I think so. I don't know. It was fascinating question.
She sounded young to me.
But anyway, what's happening next week? Mr. Social Security himself, right?
That's right. Mr. Social Security.
The rock star of Social Security advice is going to be with us next week. And will you?
Yes, I will be.
I'll be
here as well. Yeah, it's still tax season, so we're keeping Chris back at the office.
What about me? Anyway, this is Drew Dignanelli saying God bless.